This is Movies for the Blind, episode 55, The President's Mystery, part 2.
Now on, you're going to be free whether you like it or not.
Hello and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. We continue with The President's Mystery, with an unlikely hero played by an unlikely actor for the role. Henry Wilcoxon was born on the Caribbean island of Dominica and was discovered by the legendary Cecil B. DeMille, who cast him as Mark Anthony in the 1934 version of Cleopatra. While he worked in many other DeMille projects in front of and behind the camera, Wilcoxon may be best known to two very different generations as Men of the Cloth, the Vicar in Mrs. Miniver and the Bishop in Caddyshack. But this time, he's quite far from heaven as Jim, a corporate lawyer and lobbyist during the Depression. Yes, they had them even back then. His boss, George, has not been too crazy about some of FDR's New Deal programs, but maybe at some point was crazy about Jim's wife, Ilka, because she keeps wanting to hook back up with him. Anyway, on a fishing trip, Jim stumbles across a destitute small town, which may die completely because a bill Jim helped defeat stopped the revival of the town cannery, run by the lovely Charlotte. Seeing the error of his ways, and inspired by a mystery story suggested by President Roosevelt, Jim has siphoned off all of his multi-million-dollar fortune with plans to disappear from his old life and start a new life helping the small town. So, let's find out if he can do it in the conclusion of The President's Mystery. Later, Roger carries two pieces of luggage into the library.
I packed everything you laid out, sir.
All right, put him in the car.
Thank you.
He leaves Jim with Ilka.
Now will you tell me where you're going?
He fills a portfolio.
Getting out of here.
But you haven't told me where.
That's right.
What's the matter with you?
Now on, you're going to be free whether you like it or not.
Shutting a drawer, he gets up and walks out. She watches him, stunned. Then she grabs a phone on the desk and sits down with it. She dials. Soon after, at a palatial lakeside house, a servant brings a phone to George.
Who is it?
Mrs. Blake, sir.
Well, didn't I give you your instructions?
Yes, sir. But she says she come over if you don't speak to her.
All right.
Giving George the phone, the servant leaves.
Hello, Ilka. Well, that's impossible.
But you must help me. Why, he's behaving like a lunatic.
Oh, no, 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 nothing like that. Everyone knows what's wrong. He tried to pull a fast one on his friends, and he lost a fortune in tin. Why, he even had to sell me his shares at National.
George, I must see you. If you're not at the boathouse in 10 minutes, I'll come over there.
She hangs up. Concerned, George does the same and thinks, smoking.
Gano.
He stands as the servant returns.
Yes, sir.
Tell Andrew to bring out the speedboat immediately.
Yes, sir.
Later, at night, Jim stops his car on a lonely city street. Glancing around cautiously, he gets out of the car and steps around it to the sidewalk. He opens a gate to a building's basement window, which he knocks on. When it opens, he reaches into his coat pocket while a man inside holds out his hand. Jim gives him a roll of money, and the man ducks back inside. Jim makes sure the coast is still clear. He reaches down and starts to pull out a long bundle, which the man gives to him through the window. He stands, carrying a body bag, and steps back through the gate to the car, still glancing around. He loads the body into the back seat of the car. Then he hurries around to the driver's door and gets in again behind the wheel. He speeds away. Meanwhile, Ilka paces along the dock of the dim boathouse, smoking impatiently. She looks out toward the lake. A motorboat pulls up to the dock. Tossing her cigarette, she rushes to the boat as the driver steps off.
George!
But it's not George.
Very sorry, Mrs. Blake. Mr. Sardos just couldn't make it. sent me to tell you and to find out if there's anything I can do.
I'll see Mr. Sartos about that.
She moves to the boat, but he stops her.
Oh, no, you won't, Mrs. Blake. I'm sorry, but that's why I'm here.
She struggles with the man, Andrew.
Let me go!
As he shoves her away, she falls and becomes very still. Andrew looks down at her, terrified. As the sun begins to rise in the countryside, Jim drives over a high bridge spanning a ravine and stops halfway across, setting the brake. He checks around and gets out. He takes off his glasses and puts them on the body curled up in the passenger seat. Then he puts his wedding ring on the body's proper finger. He reaches into the back seat of the car and tears out some of its stuffing. Glancing around some more, he gets a matchbook from a pocket, then reaches inside again and lights the stuffing on fire. He pulls the body into the driver's seat and moves the legs onto the pedals. He starts the car, pushes one leg down on the gas pedal, reaches for the brake, and releases it. The car crashes through the railing and flips off the bridge, landing in the ravine in a flaming heap. Carrying a briefcase, Jim looks down at it. Nervously, he rushes away as smoke plumes around the car. Later, a bus pulls off a highway. It parks in a lot.
15 minutes for lunch.
And the passengers start to climb out. One of them is Jim, followed by an old man.
Take my advice and eat light. You get just as sick on a bus as you do on a train.
Clean-shaven, Jim smiles as they enter a diner. The old man sits at the counter while Jim buys a paper from the cashier, then sits beside him.
Yes, sir.
Swiss cheese sandwich and buttermilk.
Swiss cheese sandwich and buttermilk.
Yeah, you mind if I look at part of it?
The old man takes a section of the paper, making Jim grin. On his other side...
You mind if Susie looks at the funny?
She takes the other section.
So?
With no paper left, Jim is served his sandwich and buttermilk. He picks up the glass and drinks.
Hey, here's a hot one, all right. Look at this.
Last time?
I'm not surprised at anything those people do.
What people?
Hey, he don't look like a murderer, does he?
Jim finally turns from his milk to the story the old man is reading. He puts down his glass and takes the paper to read. Mrs. James Blake murdered. Body found in boathouse of Long Island home. Beside a photo of him, it starts, Ilka Stephen Blake, beautiful wife of James Blake, prominent attorney, was found dead late last night on the floor of the boathouse on their palatial estate by the gardener. The inability to reach James Blake immediately aroused police suspicion. Servants say he was seen in the house shortly before the murder, but so far all attempts to locate him have failed.
But you never can tell about them society people. Oh, they'll catch him all.
As the old man eats his soup, Jim steps to the cashier.
Can I rent a car out here? I gotta get back to New York at once.
You bet. There's a garage and lever table down the road a piece.
Can you phone him?
Yes, sir. Just a minute.
He picks up a phone.
Get me Slim's garage, will you? I'll call you, mister.
Jim returns to the counter.
You know, those people don't live like regular human beings. If it ain't one thing, it's another.
Yeah. Newsflash.
On the radio.
Blake murder case solved. Sensational discovery was made of the charred remains of Jane Blake a few hours ago at the bottom of a ravine near Burley's Falls, New York, where his car had plunged down 60 feet from the bridge, caught fire, and burned into a twisted mass of steel. Immediate investigation revealed that Blake had been speculating unwisely and had lost the major part of his immense fortune. Probably driven insane, he killed his wife and then drove wildly to his death.
Well, I ain't surprised. I said I ain't surprised. Are you?
No.
Guess you took the only way out, though.
Think so?
Sure. If you ain't got nothing to live for, you're better off dead.
Yes, but what if a man has got something to live for?
That's different. Then nothing should stand in his way.
Disturbed, Jim thinks.
All ready, folks. We're going on.
As the other passengers leave the counter to pay for their lunches, Jim remains sitting and thinking. The old man notices.
Ain't you coming?
He steps away while Jim keeps thinking.
Hey, mister. That car of yours out there waiting for you.
Glancing out at it, Jim makes a decision. He goes to the cashier.
Thanks. I've changed my mind.
He leaves the cashier with some money and gets back on the bus. Months later, Charlotte works in the reopened Springvale Cannery's office, filing documents. A young man enters.
Miss Brown, there's a man from the railroad here to see you.
Oh, fine. Have him come right in.
He opens the door for George, then leaves. Charlotte closes the drawer and turns to him.
How do you do?
How do you do? I'd like to see Mr. Carter, if I may.
Well, he's busy right now. Is there something I can do?
Well, my name is George Sartis.
Mr. Carter has definitely told your agents that we are not selling.
She sits down.
But you don't understand.
You don't. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm expecting someone.
A railroad executive?
She turns back to him, and he walks behind her.
Yes, National has made a little investment.
As he sits down, she picks up the phone.
Have Mr. Carter come right up, please.
Now, we're ready to pay a fair price for Springvale.
Yes, to close it down.
Oh, I think Mr. Carter will be interested in our proposition.
I know he won't.
Without the railroad, you can't move your merchandise.
Mr. Carter will see about that.
Well, I'd like to discuss it with him anyway.
She stands when Jim steps through another door.
Jim, National Canneries has bought the branch line. This is Mr. Sartos.
Concerned, George will recognize him even without his glasses and mustache. Jim thinks. He keeps facing away with a pipe in his mouth as he closes the door, then approaches George and Charlotte.
This is Mr. Carter, Mr. Sartos.
How do you do?
George stands and Jim nods with the pipe in front of him, then steps around the desk.
Your face seems very familiar. Could we have met somewhere before, Mr. Carter?
I doubt it. Sit down, Mr. Carter.
As Charlotte and George sit back down, Jim sits on a far corner of the desk.
Well, what's your proposition, Mr. Sartis? We're buying your canneries. Really?
Otherwise, you'll have to close down.
Oh, no. You've got to carry our freight, and at a reasonable price.
Oh, have we?
The railroad commissioner will force you to.
What makes you think that?
When you bought that road, you also bought a franchise. Your company's solvent. If you don't run that line, you're liable for damages in any court in this country.
Jim lights his pipe.
You seem to know a great deal about law, Mr. Carter.
Well, everybody knows that much about law, Mr. Sartis.
Well, here's something else that everybody should know about law. Court action can be delayed for years. I'll drag this case out until it reaches the Supreme Court.
Also reaches Senator Gilmore's committee, huh?
George stands.
Before he can interfere, I'll run this place into the ground.
As Jim keeps smoking with his back to him, George steps past him to the office door. He walks out.
Better be careful, or else he'll run himself straight back into a vegetable market.
When he notices Charlotte frowning, he pats her shoulders.
Don't worry, darling.
What are we going to do?
Well, we'll not only force him to run the railroad, but we'll sue him for every day that he doesn't. Conspiracy and restraint of trade.
But Jim, he's right. It may take years to clear up that case in court. We have to start deliveries in 3 days.
And we will, too. We'll deliver them to the main line in trucks.
Trucks? There's no place to rent them.
We'll buy them.
She stands.
Jim, are you crazy? That would cost a fortune.
Well, I've got a fortune. Darling, the last 5 minutes have given me all the confidence in the world.
In what?
In James Carter. Come on.
Where?
The bank.
Well, I think I better tell Joe about the change in plans. I'll meet you in 20 minutes.
Thank you.
They kiss, and she goes out the other door. He watches her with a smile, which fades when he turns to the front office door, where George stands smirking. He slowly closes the door. George saunters toward him and faces him across the desk.
Well, have you reconsidered? Yes, I have another proposition that might interest you. Thanks.
As they sit, Jim looks down.
What is it?
you don't mind, I won't come straight to the point, as this new proposition requires a little explaining. Until about 4 months ago, I was associated with a very clever man.
Really, your anecdotes don't interest me very much, Mr. Sellers.
Oh, I think this one will. This man suddenly lost his entire fortune, or let it be thought that he did. Then he killed his wife and committed suicide, or let it be thought that he had.
Quite a thinker, eh?
Yes, it's too bad he didn't think of just one more thing. In making his escape, he piled up enough conclusive circumstantial evidence to hang him for the murder of his wife, if he were alive, even if he tried the case himself. Oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you, he was a very clever lawyer.
What's all this got to do with the railroad?
Oh, nothing. Only I might forget this little story if he forgot about Springvale.
I don't know what you're talking about.
George stands.
And I don't know why you did all this, but I do know you're not going to get away with it. Either you get out of Springvale and let Springvale die a natural death, or you'll die an unnatural one.
You're making just one mistake, George.
Jim looks up at him.
The James Blake you knew is dead.
Then slugs him. Later, at the bank, Jim takes out some of his money with Charlotte.
We buy every truck in town.
That'll make three.
Well, we're not going to stop here. The truck agency in Milford will pick up five or six more there. In fact, we'll clean out every truck in the county. Then in 24 hours, the warehouse is emptied.
And then the next day, there's no reason
why... He closes his deposit box.
Let's not think beyond tomorrow.
Taking the case of money from Charlotte, he leaves the vault with her. They're met by a man with two officers, followed by George.
That man is James Blake. He's wanted for the murder of his wife.
I'm sorry, but he's sworn out a warrant. I'm afraid I'll have to...
This is a frame-up. He's from National Cannery.
I called the New York police. When Mr. Blake... When Jim first came here, we didn't know nothing about him, and he did look something like they said.
When she looks at him, he gives her the money.
Use this lawyer's plan.
But Jim...
I hate to do this. We'll have to look in that bag.
The sheriff opens it and finds the money.
What did I tell you?
You'll have to hold this for evidence. Come on, Jim.
Jim walks out with the police past George, leaving Charlotte dismayed, on the verge of tears. Later, at the Springvale Inn, with Andrew beside him, George meets with a man.
The main thing is time, Mike. Get it over as soon as possible.
We're all ready. Just waiting for the word to go.
George has a drink.
Well, go. Come on, Andrew.
As George and Andrew leave through one door, Mike crosses the room and opens another.
Come on in.
Several men and women enter.
You look fine. Well, I don't have to tell you your business. The main thing is time. Bill, you start in the hotel lobby.
Right.
McGraw and Petrosky, you take the main street.
Okay.
Steve, you the saloon, and Joe the pool hall. Pauline and Mary, you work the markets in the backyards.
Okay.
Now, come on, let's get going.
Okay.
Quick.
Okay, boy.
They all leave together. Soon after, outside a market...
We better save our pennies. It's going to be a hard winter.
Oh, the cannery will open again.
Not from what I hear. Anyway, I do think we ought to share in the canned goods up there. If it's a cooperative, it belongs to everybody who works there.
I said that very thing to my husband just last night.
At a pool hall.
Hey, did you guys hear? There's a creditor of the cannery in town trying to put a lien on the place.
Who said so?
Well, I'm only telling you what I heard. They'll take this stuff, and you guys will be left holding the bag. Some trick, all right.
George steps out of the inn with Andrew.
You wait here, Andrew. I'll be back.
Yes, sir.
George walks off. As Andrew sits in a rocking chair on the inn's veranda, Roger walks up the street and notices him. He approaches Andrew.
I say, Andrew.
He stands.
Hello, Roger.
Nice to meet you in this little provincial hamlet. You still driving for Mr. Sartles?
Yeah. What are you doing here?
Well, I came down to identify Mr. Blake. Is Mr. Blake all right?
Yeah.
I say, isn't it frightfully exciting? Oh, what about a little spot or something to calm the old nerves, what?
Yeah, I could use it.
Come on down here with me. There's a nice, quaint little place.
In a bar.
Sure, that guy Blake was a millionaire. Why, he worked for National Canneries. That's where he got all of his dough. Wild bet money the whole thing was a frame-up between them.
That's what the paper said.
Sure, we guys got roped in.
wait till the creditors hit this burg tomorrow and there won't be a can of beans left in the joint.
You think so?
Twibble, huh?
Why, certainly. If that place is cooperative, why, we're entitled to an equal share of the stuff that's in there, ain't we?
Well, Roger arrives with Andrew.
Andrew, I really am delighted that we met. Cheers.
A bartender. We have a little service.
What do you have, Andrew?
Straight whiskey.
One straight whiskey and one with a little seltzer water. Thank you. You know, Andrew, we really ought to see more of each other. Our masters having so much in common, you know?
Yeah.
In his jail cell, Jim overhears through a barred window.
I got a hot tip. There's a guy in town right now that's going to take that stuff out of the warehouse.
Oh, you're crazy. He can't. That's a cooperative. Belongs to all of us.
Well, it don't belong to us if we can't pay the bills. They closed the place down 3 days ago, didn't they? Well, it'll never open again.
Why, that means that all of us who've worked there for months are going to be robbed. Well, you're going to let them take it?
No! No! Well, we can't stop them. They'll sell it off for the debt.
Not if we get there first.
That's right.
Divide it up
right.
Among ourselves.
That's it. We can't break in. It's against the law.
Ain't nothing unlawful about it. Just think about last winter when you hadn't anything to eat.
Jim hurries to his cell door.
Sheriff! Sheriff!
What's the matter?
Sheriff, I gotta get out of here.
Oh, now, Jim, you gotta be reasonable.
Please, Floyd, there's something I must do. I'll come back.
Now, what would it look like? I'm an officer of the law. I can't go around turning people loose. I tell you what, suppose I get a deck of cards and I have a game of casino. That'll relieve your mind.
Listen, Floyd. In a couple of hours, everything we've done in Springville is going to be smashed. All the work the men and women in this town have put in, all their hopes, all their chances of a decent living are going to be destroyed. I'll come back, man, honestly. I'll be back before night.
You know, a funny thing happened here once. Prisoner. Dang nice fella, except he took advantage of me. I had my back turned.
He turns his back.
Never suspected. And he grabbed my keys out of my back pocket when I wasn't looking.
Soon after, Jim drives out of town, speeding along a country road, and stops at a farm.
But don't you see, Earl, it's up to you farmers. If you don't act now, you'll be right back where you were 6 months ago with your crops rotting in the field.
I'll start with Bob Coates and spread the word.
Good. I'll pick you up later.
All right.
At the cannery, workers start to climb onto a loading dock, but a few officials try to fight them back. Charlotte gets jostled around between scuffles. As she dodges a falling man, the scuffles come to blows. An old lady hits a man with her purse. Officials, managers, and workers brawl on the dock. While dozens more are held back, workers try to open the warehouse doors. A man breaks into one with a hatchet, and the doors slide open. Workers pour into a warehouse and start grabbing boxes, which they pass out to the others. A woman tears open one of the boxes and starts taking out the cans inside. More boxes are passed hand to hand over the heads of the mob. Charlotte looks on helplessly, then turns to look up the main street and finds a convoy of trucks heading toward the cannery. Powered by horse and by motor, they speed down the street with Jim. They roll past the abandoned stores, filling the street. Charlotte's face lights up as the trucks approach the cannery and stop. Farmers climb down from them, and Jim gets out of the car. Brandishing sticks and bats, they rush through the mob to the dock. They swing them at the looters to get them out of the way. Jim separates some of the fighters and motions for calm. Smiling, Charlotte struggles through the crowd toward him.
All right now, boys, settle down. We're here to make those deliveries.
He finds Charlotte and holds her, but gets a hand on his shoulder.
Just a minute, you. Hey, what's the bar of your cells made out of? Rubber bands?
The governor signed the extradition, Sheriff.
Come on, let's go.
The mob converges on them.
A few minutes ago, you allowed yourself to be scared into a panic ready to destroy everything you spent months to create. And now you're going to do the same thing over again. But you're forgetting that this place isn't only yours. It belongs to thousands of poverty-stricken towns with their men and women on relief. Now, they demand the right to work for a decent living, and it's up to you boys to help them to get it.
But what about you?
This idea is bigger than any one man. I can't help you, nor can National Canneries nor anyone else stop you. Not if you work together. It's up to you. Whatever you do here, now, this very minute, will affect every town, city, and village in this country tomorrow. When this was a frontier, your grandfathers died to protect this town. This factory is now a fort on a new frontier. What are you going to do? Destroy it or defend it? Good. Now listen. The farmers are lending their trucks. They'll help you to load them and deliver them to the main line. All right, boys, now load those trucks. Good luck to you.
Oh, Jim and Charlotte embrace.
Don't worry, darling.
Turning to his captors, he lets himself be escorted away. Meanwhile, a car weaves past the trucks.
Hi there, wait.
It's driven by Roger.
Blake, wait a moment.
He meets Jim and the officers on their way out.
Wait.
They stop as Roger bumps into the car parked in front.
Oh, I had the most awful time. Oh, Mr. Blake, sir, I've had the most appalling time, the most dreadful time, sir. But it was worth it. I succeeded. I got the truth out of him.
What are you talking about, Roger?
Oh, wait till I show you, sir. Come on up.
He pulls a drunken Andrew up from the back seat.
Now speak, you mug.
It's a lie. You can't pin it on me. I didn't kill Mrs. Blake. It was an accident. She slipped and hit her head on the cement.
Grinning, Roger shoves him back down.
There you are, sir. Now, if there's any other little thing you'd like me to do, sir?
Thank you, Roger. I think you've done pretty well already.
Thank you very much, sir.
Finding a dent in his bowler hat, Roger fixes it. An officer hauls up one of the men working for George.
This guy don't live in town. He said he was paid to start the riot.
Yeah?
The man nods.
Well, I got a pretty good idea who paid him. Take him away.
As the officer hauls him off, the sheriff notices George sitting in a car nearby and steps up behind him.
Move over.
He opens the door.
What's the idea?
You're under arrest for inciting a riot.
Why, you can't.
Move over.
George obeys reluctantly, and the sheriff gets behind the wheel. Meanwhile, a line of cannery workers passes boxes to each other hand to hand down the line toward the trucks being loaded. While other lines work behind them, the front man on the dock passes a box to Earl, who keeps the line going on the ground. Also passing boxes to be loaded are Jim and Charlotte.
Then we can leave for Washington tonight and see Senator Gilmore?
No, you've got to wait till tomorrow.
But why?
We're getting married tonight.
What?
She stops.
Come on.
Taking the next box for her, he passes it down the line, which ends with Roger, who stands in a truck bed helping to load boxes.
Come on.
Soon, boxes marked Springvale Cooperative, Eat More, Pay Less, ride on the back of the truck. At the end of a long line of loaded trucks headed for their destination. The End. Described from Movies for the Blind. And that was The President's Mystery. Charlotte was played by Betty Furness, who would cross paths with another president and become a bit of a crusader in real life. After her movie career, she did more work with the Democratic Party, which led to President Lyndon Johnson offering her a job as Special Assistant for Consumer Affairs. Well, this began her many years as a well-known consumer advocate in various forms of government and later on TV, for local news in New York City, and on NBC's The Today Show. Another strong woman stars in our next movie, which was suggested by one of you.
Well, how would you describe your husband, Mrs. Johnson?
I couldn't. I haven't been able to for a long time.
Get a good look at the killer?
Too good. That streetlight was right on his face when he got out of his car and shot it.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but if I were you, I'd hang up. The police are tracing your call.
It's bad enough to be alone in a big city with no place to go. But as soon as the newspapers hit the streets and the killer finds out he didn't get your husband, there'll be guys looking for him with guns.
Where's your husband, Mrs. Johnson?
I don't know.
Did he see the killer?
I don't know.
Should we dance?
Why don't you drop dead?
You find your husband with my help. Give me an exclusive for 24 hours, and I'll get my paper to pay you for it.
Trying to buy me so soon?
First, I'm going to try and buy you. And if I can, I'm going to try to win you.
Isn't that the reverse of the usual procedure?
I'm a perverse fellow.
I don't think he's running away from us. I think he's running away from you.
I said get out.
That's Woman on the Run, next time on Movies for the Blind. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. The movies are from the Internet Archive, which is also the host for this podcast. So please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.